Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We're coming to you today with a very special show. It'll be a call-in show, and the number to call is 212-209-2900. Over the past several weeks, we've been focusing on Barack Obama, False Hopes and Sure Change, 13 shows that have been combined in our WBAI premium. Today, we would like to discuss with you your comments on this issue and also respond to your questions. Again, 212-209-2900. This is a significant moment. Today, headlining the New York Times, steep market drops highlight despair over rescue efforts, and this includes the rescue efforts of President Barack Obama and his cabinet. As Floyd Norris writes, fears that the world's economies are even weaker than had been thought ricocheted around the globe on Monday as investors from Hong Kong to London to New York bailed out of stocks. Losses cascaded from one market to the next as concern spread that government efforts had not been enough to stabilize troubled financial institutions or broader economies. Only by Tuesday morning did markets show signs of stabilizing. And by stabilizing, they mean at the very low points on their key indexes. In the United States, for instance, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell below 7,000 for the first time since 1997 as investors reacted to reports that construction and industrial activity had continued to decline. And also to the news that the insurance giant, American International Group, known as AIG, was reporting a $61.7 billion loss. It was the largest quarterly loss ever for a company. Note that, the largest quarterly loss ever for any company. And AIG, you will recall, has already been bailed out by the U.S. government and expects even more billions of dollars from us, the taxpayer. Let's look what it means in terms of jobs. The New York Times reports that Paul Dales, an economist with Capital Economics, pointed to a survey in forecasting that the February employment report will show a decline of 785,000 jobs when it's released this coming Friday. This would make it the largest one-month decline in employment in nearly 60 years. Again, note, the largest decline in employment in 60 years. He also added that when the fourth quarter GDP, that's the gross domestic product, is released by the U.S. government, it'll show a decline in annual rate of 6.2%. This is the worst in more than a quarter century. That's 25 years. And this happens because of the fall in construction activity. So when the government revises its figures of the GDP, that is also going to bring down the employment figures. Bring up the decline in employment figures. Think about what is taking place and what it means. And what the response has been of the government. Because, as Charles Schwab, chief strategist Liz Ann Saunders said, quote, "We can unleash as many trillions of dollars in stimulus as we wish, but if we don't fix the banking system, we still have a patient in cardiac arrest." And what has the government been doing? It has been spending money, spending our money, and handing it right over to the captains of finance, to the people who created this crisis, the capitalist rulers. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the magnitude of this crisis is well articulated in the article you're citing, notably in its reference to the global impact that this is having. Quote, "It's pretty despondent everywhere," said Dwyfer Evans, the chief strategist at State Street Global Markets in Hong Kong. He says the leading indicators show that there is a very, very, very low level of activity. We're not seeing corporate investment picking up. We're not seeing consumers starting to spend again. In other words, the traditional mechanisms by which economies come out of recessions are completely absent. Hopes that the American economy might lead it back out are fading. The article continues. Warren E. Buffett, who is a key advisor to Barack Obama and the chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, wrote in his company's annual report, "The economy will be in shambles, not only throughout 2009, but well beyond." And as if to emphasize this, the Institute for Supply Management reported that companies in Britain, France, Germany, Italy, and the United States have confirmed that there is a complete lack of bottom and that jobs are in free fall. Paul Dales, the economist with Capital Economics, pointing to a survey in forecasting that February employment will show a decline of 785,000 jobs, stated the decline will be the largest one-month fall in employment in 60 years. And this is the beginning. Last week, the United States revised its estimate of fourth quarter gross domestic product to show declines at worse than a quarter of a century and reported that construction activity is falling, but that will indeed be but the little beginning because construction activity is the smallest portion of financial undertakings, which indeed is reflected in the crisis of fictive capital, the speculators' capital, the Ponzi scheme capital that controls the capitalist economy. For many, many decades now, the capitalists have concluded that they can't make enough money with falling rates of profit and workforces seeking living wages and health care and minimum means of survival. There's not enough money in it. The rate of profit declines. They've invested and they've placed all their funds in speculative instruments. And the role of the government has been, as they control that government, because they've simply put on a different hat, when they operate the government as if it's a separate entity. And indeed, the S&P 500 in this process has lost 43% of its value. And indeed, this is the worst six-month performance since the Great Depression. Indeed, the speculation about an international effort to resolve this has been exposed as lacking in any credibility. Quote, the EU again has proven it is unable to arrange a coordinated response to the process, the crisis. Commerzbank wrote in a note Monday, the problems arising in Eastern Europe are putting great pressure on the euro, which is facing collapse. While all countries are suffering, the United States and Western European countries are attempting to mount large stimulus plans, which indeed entail little more than bailing out the banks. The article continues. In addition to what you were citing, Maya, about the losses at AIG, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, the London-based international bank, said it is closing its American finance business, which it had acquired. It said it would raise $17 billion from shareholders and new capital, and its shares actually fell 19%. Because those things they are acquiring and those shares they are seeking to obtain are without any credible value. The article says another factor depressing investors is dividend cuts that companies are being forced to make. The largest regional bank, PNC Financial Services Group, has cut its dividends 85%. International Paper cut theirs 90%. General Electric cut theirs 68%. J.P. Morgan Chase reduced their dividend 87%. The stock is losing value. It is no longer an instrument of gain. It is turning into its opposite. This article is really, quite extraordinary in the way it lays out the magnitude of this crisis. The S&P 500 fell 18.6% in the first 2 months of 2009, the worst start since 1933. And indeed, in 1933, the stock market went into terminal decay. The S&P 500 has now fallen below, and the Dow is close to the levels that prevailed. It's a doomsday scenario that is in today's New York Times, brothers and sisters, in the article by Floyd Morris, and there's much to amplify that.
Ralph, before we go to our callers, I would also like to refer to an article that appeared in the New York Times, again, a front page analysis, and this was on February 20th, a week ago. And this was an analysis of the Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility, the TALF, which is set to hand over more than $1 trillion in low-cost loans, not low-cost loans to consumers, but low-cost loans to the major hedge funds and the holders of the debt-based securities. In other words, the securitization of the mortgage-backed securities. These securities investors also are not only in the mortgage-backed securities, but in credit card and auto loan markets, where those loans also are ganged up, securitized, and sold. Now, we have here $1 trillion that is going to these major hedge funds, and what are they going to do with it? They're going to be able to borrow against as much as 95% of the face value of their overpriced securities. Overpriced because the underlying debt, for the most part, people are reneging on. They can't afford to pay it. Consequently, they're liable for as little as 5% of any losses. The New York Times, here you have what the top bourgeois newspaper in the United States, one of the top, New York Times, The Washington Post, LA Times. Here we have the New York Times commenting on this giveaway to the captains of capital. The Times says that the administration, quote, would be effectively subsidizing the profits of big private investment firms in the bond markets. Who is the author of this TALF? The TALF is part of the massive bank bailout proposal that has been outlined by Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner early this month. And remember, Timothy Geithner is a protege of Robert Rubin, Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton, and also one of the chief executives of Citigroup.
He was the head of the
requiring
Fed.
A bailout.
He was the head of the Fed in New York, and he presided all over all of the slashings of support for wages and employment and all of the allocation of resources to the speculative derivatives, which are into the root of the present crisis.
And one more giveaway, Ralph, is with respect to the housing plan, President Barack Obama's Homeowner Affordability and Stability Plan, known as HASP, that was announced on Wednesday. Here, too, the lion's share goes to financial interests. Remember that HASP depends on the voluntary participation of private banks, and it does nothing for the hundreds of thousands of renters who've been thrown into the streets by evictions and foreclosures against their landowners. But foremost, it doesn't reduce any outstanding debt or principal that homeowners own the banks, and for which millions of Americans surpasses the value of their own homes, because housing values have decreased a third and sometimes 50%. The HASP is loaded with measures that's designed to support the financiers and the investors. For the financial elite, the bill sets aside the lion's share of a $75 billion appropriation. And what the banks wanted and what they gained in this HASP is that they will not be required to write down the vast value of their overpriced loans. That is, they're not going to report their losses. And this was very important to them because it means that they're stabilizing their stock prices.
Well, I think, Marian, looking at that, an interesting comparison will be with the 1987 stock market crash, because what occurred then is that the U.S. ruling class and all of their basically their puppets, their mouthpieces in the Federal Reserve, responded to the crisis in the economy by lowering interest rates and providing cheap credit to fuel the speculative boom that the banks were operating. So the money then found its way into assets, stocks, mortgage-backed securities with almost no collateral value for this. They were just issuing paper. The price of a security has to somehow refer to some sort of real value in production, but this was near zero. So the government, we slashed interest rates, funneled massive amounts of money into the banks and national institutions, and the consequence has been this total meltdown. And what are they doing now? What is Obama presiding over? As we've been citing in Bloomberg, the amount of money that they're handing over to these same speculators and banks approaches $11 trillion. What are they going to do with it? They're going to consolidate their gains, buy up falling companies, speculate more, and prepare for the next crisis, which will be even deeper. And one of the fundamental things about this is that the response of U.S. capitalism is inexorably linked to the fact that war and imperialism are at the heart of capitalism and have been for the last 70 years. So this budget that has been produced by Barack Obama and his touted budget speech, the budget submitted to Congress, outlays for the 210 fiscal year $3.94 trillion, that's on paper, which is an increase of 32%. And indeed, estimates by the Bureau of Budget are that the total government revenues for that period will be nothing like the $4 trillion they're proposing to spend. The income will be about $2 trillion. Greater deficit, more deficit spending. And what is the consequence of this war budget? Because bear in mind, this is linked to a major expansion of war in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. It's linked, moreover, to a promise by Barack Obama to keep 60,000 troops permanently in Iraq and to delay the removal of troops down to that level to the end of 2011, which is a total capitulation. If in fact, that's not even the right word. It's an embrace of the Bush agenda, the McCain agenda. It's an embrace of the rulers' dependence upon war production and expanded war. And all of this means that we have not a war, only a war budget, but an austerity budget for federal spending programs. The amounts that he's talking about for health care, for housing, for infrastructure are desultory. They are absolutely minuscule compared to the debt that they are facing, and they will have no impact whatsoever on the needs of the population, who will be further assailed with the consequence of the deepening crisis.
Ralph, let's go to our callers. 212-209-2900. Michael, our first caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Ralph and Maya.
Yes.
Yes.
Thanks for calling.
You know, thank you for picking the call. I there are so many questions I got to ask. Now, my brother once told me he didn't know the difference between right and wrong. Do these people know what's right and wrong? Does Barack Obama know what you are saying now? And how would this affect the people, even people who are receiving their Social Security checks? Will they receive them any longer? Can they receive them at the bank? What is the situation? Is there a solution to this? Is there a possibility that there can be a turnaround, or are we definitely on the point of no return here?
Well, I think the first point I would make is that it's not a matter of Barack Obama's innocence or his lack of awareness of the consequences of the policies that he's overseeing. As we've documented or tried to articulate in the past programs, Barack Obama was selected and vetted and prepared to assume this role, to arouse with some populist vague rhetoric expectations that would channel political dissent and disaffection into the controllable ranks of the Democratic Party while he managed the crisis. And so, indeed, what you have on almost every level, he's expanding the war in Afghanistan. He's embracing Bush's policies and those of McCain in Iraq. He's allocating vast sums, and he's doing more than that. If you just take the question that has brought about the most emotional condemnation of the Bush regime, those concerning civil liberties, those concerning the preparation for martial law, those concerning the use of torture, those involving rendition, all of this is being expanded by Barack Obama. He's not merely defending the Guantanamo in Afghanistan, but the Obama administration has insisted that prisoners detained indefinitely at the U.S. prison in Bagram have no right to challenge detention or treatment through American courts. And beyond that, they're going to expand it. And not only are they, the detention center in Bagram is being vastly expanded in anticipation of the expanded war. The men involved in a federal court action, detainees seized in another country as terrorist suspects, moreover, were rendered to Afghanistan. These are not just Afghani militants or activists or innocents who have been detained, although there are many of them. From Yemen, from Tunisia, from Thailand, from Pakistan, they've been kidnapped off the streets and sent to this torture chamber in Bagram. It's going to be expanded. And what about the claim that he's going to shut down Guantanamo? The ACLU has documented that he's not really not shutting it down. He's building new ones. He's going to retain a core of prisoners who will not have any entitlement to pursue their rights in any civilian court, but they're going to expand use of these facilities to Camp Pendleton and to other military bases across the country. What about the question of torture? He says the United States does not torture. What does the ACLU and for that matter, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal report? That, in fact, the techniques that are designated as torture will be expanded, and new memoranda are being prepared to authorize the CIA and the Army to do this. Here's the report on January 23rd.
Ralph.
Yes.
Okay. The short answer is yes, we can change these. And I'd like to remind our listeners that on March 21st, there is a large anti-war demonstration, and we hope you participate in it. And as we've said week after week, taking aim is not a spectator sport. The information we give is important to help you in your organizing efforts. And each and every one of us can be involved in organizing in the workplace, in the community, and we can change our circumstances. Michael, let's go on to our next caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. Before I begin, I just want to point out the absence of any media coverage about the abduction of John Selecki in Pakistan. I have to go on Chinese news media websites and just foreign news media websites to find any information about this poor fellow who is an American. He was kidnapped and he's still held hostage. But my comment to Ralph when he picked up was about the stimulus plan and how much money can be given to each taxpayer in place of the hundreds of billions given to bank owners and corporate elite.
Yes, well, actually, we don't really know what this is going to translate to other than it'll be de minimis, because the stimulus plan is a very vague designation, but in truth, he keeps talking about the need for everybody to tighten their belts and for everybody to accept responsibly what is possible. Meanwhile, he's expanding war on a scale that will require yet more trillions of dollars to be laid out for the military operations in Afghanistan. The memos reveal that the actual plans for the expansion of the war in Afghanistan had been made while he was still a candidate, and while Bush was and McCain were on board and consulting about them. Barack Obama has, without missing a beat, applied
them. Oh, he's a very deft politician, and his use of, you know, he's going to pull out combat troops, but there's still going to be 30,000 Americans in Iraq, you know.
Actually, between 50 and 60,000, and they state explicitly that the reduction of combat troops in Iraq, to the extent that it occurs, is to free them up to go to Afghanistan and Pakistan. The Pentagon studies plan is explicit about that. All of the generals, look, here's an editorial in the Wall Street Journal. It's entitled Obama's Bush Vindication. Obama was rightly generous in his praise of U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker and Generals David Petraeus and Ray Odierno, quote, two of our finest generals, unquote. It was never likely that Obama would explicitly praise George W. Bush for his handling of the Iraq War, but we didn't expect ourselves to be praising Obama for a repetition of that precise operation in Iraq. Headlines from the president's speech focused on his present promise to end combat operations and withdraw U.S. forces by the end of 2011, but there's considerably more to it than that. Obama acknowledged that our forces in Iraq have succeeded beyond any expectation. He was rightly generous in his praise of Ryan Crocker and Generals David Petraeus and Roy Odierno, but he recognized that the Iraqis have made significant political progress that is renewed cause for hope in Iraq, which we must ensure. Obama's repudiation of his own positions as a candidate, this is the Wall Street Journal, and his vindication of Mr. Bush's position is his decision to maintain a sizable military presence in Iraq in the range of 50,000 troops past the withdrawal date. That force is the size of U.S. military presence in South Korea through the Cold War, and its mission involves training Iraqi forces and U.S. force protection and targeted counterterrorism missions on a large scale. The article goes on. Barack Obama deserves praise for noting that not all neighbors are contributing to its security and that others are working to undermine it. And then he goes on to the Wall Street Journal to say, Barack Obama is preparing to take military action against those incursions. Quote, we sent our troops to Iraq to do away with Saddam Hussein and we've got the job done. We kept our troops in Iraq to establish a sovereign government. You got the job done. And we will leave Iraqi people with a hard-earned opportunity to live a better life. That is your achievement, he's addressing the military commanders. That is the prospect that you have made possible, unquote. And the Wall Street Journal says, amen. This is the outline by Barack Obama of a full-scale expansion of imperial reach in the region.
He is one of the same, you know, different.
Well, you have only to look at the budget that has been proposed. The overt defense spending is $534 billion for 2010, but that's only the beginning. There's a supplemental budget that's been included of $130 billion appropriation for wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and then another supplemental emergency war funding to supplement the rest of the 2009 fiscal year, and that's for $75.5 billion. So this adds to a total of $739.5 billion. But if you add up other related military spending that's in the budget, you come to more than $1 trillion. Again,
well,
we're talking
that's
about most of the discretionary federal spending, and this is allocated in the Obama administration budget for military adventures.
By the way, Maya, as you're pointing out, I mean, Barack Obama not only talked about the necessity to expand the war and to maintain 50 to 60,000 troops in Iraq, but he gave a political justification for the war, and he addressed the military in particular. You have bled for your best friends and unknown Iraqis. You have borne an enormous burden for your fellow citizens while extending a precious opportunity to the people of Iraq. Now, would anybody know that nearly 2 million people have been killed? That 4 million people are internal refugees? That all sewage and running water and electricity have been devastated in Iraq? That unemployment is near 60% of the adult population? That the cities have been reduced to rubble in large measure and that their infrastructure is a thing of the past? This is a war of decimation for oil. But listen to the language of Barack Obama in justifying not merely the past, but in preparing for its expansion in the immediate future.
And in Ralph,
is this an architect of change? No, this is a pimp for the Imperium who is conning the American people while preparing for new austerity in the immediate future. Because make no mistake about it, this is a war budget, this is a military budget, this is an austerity budget. And this is a commitment to expand the turnover of yet more trillions of dollars to the financial gangsters who are at the heart of the crisis in the first place, gangsters who will take that vast amount of money and not place it back into any productive activity in the economy, let alone reduce the condition of crisis for people who are in the process of losing their homes, losing their jobs, losing their means of survival in this economy. No, they're going to assemble a new monopoly of those failing resources that they will gather up to sell off for pieces of paper on which they will yet again speculate in stock markets and trading, which they think will earn them huge amounts of money. These are the
and
people
Ralph,
who are...
That, Ralph,
yes.
On that note, we'll pause now for station identification.
Only two things scare me, and one is nuclear war.
What's the other?
Excuse me?
What's the other thing that scares you?
Hi, this is Jamie.
Hi, this is Sarah from Brand Van 3000, and you're listening to
WBAI
99.5 FM.
New York?
New York.
And Maya Schoen. Today we have a call-in show. The number to call is 212-209-2900. The topic of our discussion is Barack Obama, false hope, and short change. Michael, let's go to our next caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good evening, Ralph.
Hello,
good evening.
For calling.
Yeah. You know, I thank y'all because I was really a Barack Obama supporter in the beginning, but listening to your show, I was skeptical at first, but I took a second look. And if you really, for example, if you really look at the budget, between the military spending, the money that's going to the banks that hasn't helped anyone recover from a mortgage or recover from a foreclosure or get their head out from underwater, and the money that's going to be paid back in interest to the same banks that the American taxpayers gave the money to in the first place, there'll be no money left for any of these high-minded programs and all of these high speechifications that he made. And it's really sad. I mean, I will be there at the demonstration in March, but I just try to tell other people, you got to wake up and look. This guy is the same old smoke and mirror garbage that we've been going through for the past 8 to almost 30 years of American politics in my lifetime. And I just really thank you all for opening up my eyes.
I
well, thank you, brother, for calling.
That's the you're right on target, brother, and I very much appreciate that because, look, what is it that the ruling class has made the centerpiece of economic life in our society? Credit. Credit cards. Everything bought on credit. Everything bought on the buy and buy because that's how they con people who don't have enough income to buy things on which they make huge profits. And then what does the credit card industry take as their minimum credit, rate of interest? 32%. There was a bill before Congress which would limit it to 32%. Barack Obama, when as a senator, voted against it. He didn't think 32% was enough. And what we're talking about here is if you listen carefully to what Obama says, he says explicitly in his speech to the Congress that those who were making unwise investments in buying things they couldn't afford should not be benefited. Who the hell is he talking about? The vast mass of our people who, in order to afford a home or a car, have to go into debt to the banks and the credit companies on the buy and buy. And, of course, as their income drops, their capacity to pay these usurious rates that would make the mafia blush fall to zero. So what do? You blame the victim. You don't blame the speculators with these Ponzi schemes, with their derivatives, with their speculation on securitized mortgages, which are no longer viable, but they're extrapolating vast sums of money from trading them as if they are going to make yet greater profit from these pieces of paper, but it's taken out of the hides of the poor. It's taken out of the hides who depend on on a credit card to be able to buy anything in this economy. That's the character of late capital. It's based upon deficit financing, it's based upon credit, and it's based upon paper shuffling and speculation with the stock market as a vast casino in which a handful of financial gangsters make unimaginable profits, multi-trillions of dollars, and the consequences they never have to meet. It's socializing the loss and privatizing the gain. That's capitalism, and that's what indeed this budget represents, except that the budget is being presented at a time when the system is in terminal decay, and yet they're proposing even greater expenditure on war and even vaster handouts to the same gangster elite. How can any rational person look at that scenario and not grasp that this is a system incapable? The callers have been asking or addressing the question of what is to be done. Is it a matter of Obama learning what really is at stake? No. Is it because the people in power don't understand the consequences of their policies? I don't think so. It's very clear, is it not? We need to build a movement of our own that challenges this structure of power, which says that it is rotten to the core, that it is run by the rapacious few against the needs of the vast mass of our people, that we have to remove this system and replace it with a control over economic life that is democratic in the interest of the workers who produce the value. Absent that, the crisis will deepen, the repression will intensify, and nothing but misery will result. So knowing that and facing that with the concrete demonstration of what are the policies of these politicians in office and what are the consequences for ourselves, let's get hold of that fundamental truth, brothers and sisters, that the power to change resides solely with working people, with the mass of our people, through independent organization, and let's face it, for a struggle for power, for a struggle to dispossess this gangster crew. We have a history of revolutionary struggle, not only in our own society, but across many generations. It's time to reclaim that history for ourselves, to learn its lessons, and to apply them in our own lifetime.
Thank you for calling, and we're on to our next caller.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, it's so good to speak with you. Well, let me tell you, am I to believe that even Rush Limbaugh is correct this time? Are the new type of Republicans are talking the truth? And then, of course, I wanted to ask you that the first caller has said, are the Social Security checks, the SSI checks, the food stamps, are they also in jeopardy now? Can we still continue to receive the checks at the bank?
Yes,
or do we go there and then they don't have it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you are receiving your Social Security and your food stamp your Social Security checks, and also the food stamp program is intact. And, in fact, the food stamp program will be extended as more and more people are on the verge of starvation with the loss of jobs, and also unemployment is continued. Social Security is an independent program. It's only in jeopardy. It's paid out of the wages. It's taken from the wages. It's an insurance program taken out of the wages of working people. It's only been in jeopardy because the federal government has dipped into what is called the lock box and has been borrowing against it illegally. Social Security and also Medicare are programs that are independent of the normal federal budget. I'd like to make a point in terms of cutbacks, because the auto workers have been in the forefront of organizing throughout their history and have led the way in terms of quality of life and a living standard, you know, the living standards of working people. And today we have, at this moment, workers at Ford Motor Company attending informational meetings, and they'll be voting this weekend on proposals by the United Auto Workers to reopen their 2007 contract and to impose new concessions. The meetings are in response to a deadline that's been imposed by the Obama administration for restructuring the U.S. auto industry in order to give the auto industry some loans, because the U.S. automakers are saying they can't get any money from the private sector and they rely upon the government sector. Well, the agreement by the federal government was that wages would reach the lower level of the non-unionized auto companies, but it went even further. The proposal is to eliminate cost of living pay. Cost of living, which means the pay scale, goes up as the cost of living goes up a few percentage points each year, so that, in other words, you're staying at the level of what your wage would have been the year before. And this was won in the 1960s after a three-month strike. It averages over $100 per week for each worker. Another factor that they're asking to eliminate is performance bonuses and also a Christmas bonus. And supplemental unemployment benefits also will be slashed. But the most far-reaching attack is on the restructuring of the Voluntary Employee Beneficiary Association, that's VEBA, which was the other concession, the other sellout by the United Auto Workers to the auto companies, to Ford in particular.
Not by the workers, but by the union bureaucracy.
The union bureaucracy. And this had to do with the retiree medical benefits before there were set benefits that were paid for by the company. And this was then shifted over to the United Auto Workers. This is a multi-billion dollar fund that was placed under the union control in the last contract, whereby the union would be responsible for retiree medical benefits and the companies were supposed to pay in it. With this new concession, Ford will save almost $7 billion this year alone by substituting stock transfers for money, for cash payments into the retiree medical fund. Well, if the Ford stock goes down, then the money that's in the retiree medical fund is also going to go down. So this is a very sharp attack on retiree.
Well, the whole benefits of the budget represents this kind of attack. When you listen to Barack Obama on fixing health care and on the question of Social Security, he starts out by stating that the cost of health care will bankrupt the country, and therefore it has to be, quote, fixed, unquote. Well, that means that they're going to create a program of speculation based on private ownership and the role of the insurance companies, which will basically, in truth, reduce the practical gains or the practical access to health care, because nothing can escape. And as for Social Security, what they are slavering to do, these banks and corporate rulers, is to get their hands on the Social Security funds and to apply it to speculation.
And that's what the Bush administration tried to do in reshaping Social Security, where instead of having a defined benefit, the amount of money that you receive each month, a defined pension, they were going to transfer money into 401ks so that with a drop in the stock market of 30%, your limited pension that you got from Social Security would have also dropped 30%. Let's go on to our next caller. Again, the number to dial is 212-209-2900 to speak. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I just have two questions, and I'll hang up.
Yeah.
You know about two books that Webster Tarpley has written because of Obama?
I don't know about Webster Tarpley's latest, but the problem for me with Webster is that he's always looking to the British Crown to explain the collapse of capital, and he tells us to read Machiavelli to find a solution. So I haven't read his latest book, but the political prescription of Webster is, from my point of view, something less than desirable.
I think you have a good point there, but the book that he has, Obama the Postmodern Coup, is a perfect description of what's going on and what's going to happen.
Well, I'm sure he has some good data in there pertaining to Obama, but I think it's worth pointing out that Webster was promoting the New Deal that Obama represented prior, and also maintaining that the Republican Party would collapse and disappear as a New Deal would be introduced into the United States. Now he's singing a different tune, it seems, and I guess that should be welcome. But I think the root criticism I would make here is the absence of a structural understanding of the roots of this crisis in capitalism as an economic and social order. And without that, you tend to be all over the map. And I guess finally, I'm a little bit concerned about the 30 years of being with LaRouche, with all this business about the British Crown and obscure centers for of power that don't exist to explain what is really very basic and simple, namely there's a ruling class in the United States that has a monopoly over economic and social activity in the country. Just,
well,
I mean,
also,
look, yes, please.
One more, and I'll go.
No, please.
Do you believe that Obama will be, like, the last president? I mean, do you think that they're just going to completely suck the Treasury dry and we're just going to collapse into some sort of third world, wasteland?
I think that as they expand war and as their trillions of dollars of handouts don't result in any resolution, that the crisis will deepen and there will be, as I'm sure we all realize, a growing resistance on the part of the population. It's at that point that the rulers may be tempted to use measures of repression, including military rule. But once that step is taken, when the mask is removed for the vast majority of the people, they're in a territory which leads to their overthrow. I don't think we have to despair about the ruthlessness of these rulers, because remember, they are the few and we are the many. We must document the measures they take. I mean, the Bush executive orders, which Obama and his attorney general show no sign of canceling or removing, namely that anybody can be declared an enemy combatant, and those who undermine social and economic policy can have their property seized, can have anything that they own taken from them without any due process. This is an executive order. It hasn't been canceled. Why is that? They make reference to the Bush regime, but they are expanding the policies that he implemented while giving lip service to something else. And I think we have to keep our eye on what they do, not just on what they say. And particularly is that true when it comes to the budget that they propose, because, please, there is an acknowledged deficit of $1.75 trillion, which is 12% of the U.S. gross domestic product in the first year of the application of this budget. You and I know, brothers and sisters, that we know that this is a vastly understated deficit, because they've handed trillions of dollars more to these banks than they acknowledge. But above all, this is a war budget. They are going to spend yet more trillions of dollars on the military. There ain't no money for doing anything for the population, apart from the lack of incentive on the part of the rulers. What did the bank bailouts represent, which were financed by tax dollars? They constitute a component of government expenditure. The handouts are to major financial institutions. They don't constitute any kind of injection into the real economy. Quite the opposite. They contribute to financing the restructuring of the banking system through yet another massive concentration of wealth, centralization of power, buying up of anything that's failed. They'll buy up this is windfall cash for these financial gangsters, trillions. They'll buy up their weaker competitors. They'll consolidate themselves with new mergers, a new wave of corporate buyouts, acquisitions in the financial service industries. They'll make yet more trillions of dollars. They'll use these large amounts of speculative assets, this paper wealth, along with all that they make in the speculation, to buy out the real economy, corporations, the automobile industry, telecom, media, anything that, whose value is dropped as the markets collapse. And then,
Ralph, a good example of what the Obama administration is doing has to do with AIG, American International Group, as I opened the show discussing them. The U.S. Treasury handed over another $30 billion in public assets to AIG yesterday, and this is the fourth time the government has stepped in to bail out AIG. It's already received more than $150 billion in cash and loans. Think about it. While each of us, we and our listeners, are having a very difficult time managing, AIG and its executives have $150 billion. What is AIG? It's one of the largest players in the global unregulated insurance market. It's estimated as a world market at over $62 trillion. And this is a market of, aside being the insurance, it's the unregulated market of credit default swaps. That is the private contracts under which companies like AIG guarantee the debt including those mortgage-backed bonds of which I spoke earlier in the show that are held by banks and other companies,
Maya,
and which the Obama administration is going to provide a 95% guarantee. What, Ralph?
I want to. What you're saying is, I think, wonderfully illustrated by Obama's housing plan, something called the Homeowner Affordability and Stability Plan, which he called HASP, which he announced on Wednesday. He's selling that as if it's going to relieve the debt and the mortgage crisis facing working people in their
right.
homes. But
right,
in fact,
Ralph. And as I had mentioned, lion's share, again, as with the bailout of AIG and Citigroup and Bank of America and the auto
yeah.
industry, the lion's share is going to the financial interest.
Let's spell this out.
So, Ralph, in this remaining time, we have five more minutes. Let's go to another caller.
All right.
Hello? Hello, you're on the air.
Always on target. Thank you for taking my phone call. This is Zach DeHamble from Valley Stream, New York, and I wish you that the Mother Nature be on your side all the time, brother
thank
and sister.
Thank you for calling.
Thank
and
you
thank
very
you
much.
For saying that.
Please repeat the date at the event with the 21st of March so anybody can hear the entire planet if it's possible.
Well, we'll be discussing and giving specifics about where these are the big anti-war demonstrations that are taking place nationally.
Okay, thank you.
Let me just mention this. Because I think it's important. Hundreds of thousands of renters will be thrown out into the streets by evictions and foreclosures. But this homeowner affordability plan doesn't give a dime to those people. The money is going to be handed over to the private banks. The cynicism and the duplicity of this. Anyone who is deemed able to afford their present rate will not qualify. If a mortgage company decides that refinancing a loan costs them more than sending the house into foreclosure, they are free to deny refinancing. Thus, the HASP, as it's called, which is crafted in close consultation with the banks, is top-loaded with measures for the financiers and the investors. The lion's share of the $75 billion appropriation goes to them. The banks are not going to be asked to write down the value of their overpriced loans. They don't have to relinquish control over the securities on which they committed this fraud. In fact, the overall plan, which Obama is presenting on the HASP, is to funnel trillions of dollars into the hands and accounts of the financial institutions and investors who precipitated the crisis, and he's selling this under something called the Homeowner Affordability and Stability Plan. The New York Times ran a front-page analysis of something called the Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility, or TALF, which is going to hand over $1 trillion to the hedge funds and the holders of debt-based securities, and it's being sold as helping out the victims of this mortgage crisis.
Ralph, let me interrupt you so we can get in one last caller. No time?
Okay. Well, you know, it's always I hate to, brothers and sisters, my apologies. We go on a lot on when I really want to make more time for your calls. But I don't believe that people have access to the information here that elucidates for them what they feel, what they see, what they experience. And we want to make that information your own possession so it arms you for the struggles ahead. We try to give the sources each time we cite it. We encourage you to go to Google and look up these articles and this documentation, or turn to us at any time. If you need citations, contact us at our web. We'll refer. You can take. We will send you the material. This is what we really aspire to do in Taking AIM, is to equip our listeners with the analysis and information that will prepare us for the struggles ahead.
And we'd like to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of you who contributed to WBAI and thus made the broadcast of Taking AIM possible. WBAI, listener-sponsored, community-based radio, is there for each and every one of us.
Maya, if we have a minute, we were talking about the turn towards credit debt, And the you know, the captains of capital are denouncing the victims here, that they bought things they couldn't afford. Who the hell promoted it? It is a critical component of the financialization of the economy, the making of the public dependent on credit card debt, on every kind of debt. It's sold nonstop,
Ralph,
day and night. Financialization was the response of capitalism to their own crisis. And they've laid waste to basic industry. They've created mass unemployment. That was the job of Paul Volcker, the top economic advisor to Obama. He broke the resistance of the working class when he was touting for Reagan with the assault on Patco.
Ralph, we're going to be back next week with a jam-packed show full of information, full of analysis. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Thank you. We are each in different places this week. Thank you for your patience with the quality of our broadcast. Next week, we'll be back in the studio with another edition of Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen.
This Sunday, March 8th, is International Working Women's Day. WBAI 99.5 FM is celebrating with an entire day of women's programming. If you are a woman writer, poet, or actress and would like to perform your